Did you know, like, once you started putting these mixtapes out, once people started, you know, vibing with them, that that was what you were going to do, at least for the next, like, some odd years?
No, not at all. It was just something I did because I loved it. And, you know, it became bigger than I thought, and then it became bigger regionally, and then it became, you know, national, and then the internet stuff was kind of hitting right at the same time, all the blogs and everything. And that gave it another boost. And then I ended up somehow in New York City fulfilling my dreams.
Mick, how's it going?
Hey, what's up?
So today we have Mick Batiski. He's a musical storyteller, DJ, style influencer, digital influencer. Mick's really made a career for himself, just being a creative and, you know, just having very unique thoughts that that resonate with people. So, Mick, glad to have you.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So, we'll start off and maybe jump around a little bit in the timeline. But just first, I want to talk about your music a little bit. That's, you know, that's where the whole the genesis began. You know, you've got this really unique sound. I was listening last night. You know, some Adele remixes and, you know, Leon Bridges, Outkast, like the DJ Jazzy Jeff. You know, in the summer. Tell me a little bit about that. Where'd the really where'd that flavor come from?
I mean, my thing in general is just, like, I like combining eras. Mm. So even in all the projects you mentioned, they're all kind of like taking stuff that's like new and mixing it with stuff that's old. I kind of like, I'm kind of like relevant to different generations. Like, I'm relevant from like maybe the early 2000s that I'm relevant now, and depending on how people come to know me. Mm-hmm. So I love the idea of like bridging stuff. And obviously, like, 90s stuff was like the reason a lot of people became DJ, still is for that matter. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of merging it. So, you know, the Adele thing of 10 years old, but, you know, that was mixing her music with music from the late 80s. The Leon Bridges thing was a couple years old, and that was like using like 90s Texas stuff, even the summertime stuff. But me and Jeff are like obviously old school influenced, because it's just all classic, like barbecue kind of stuff is what we try to do. But those are actually fascinating also, because we started those 10 years ago. And at the time, we were only using music from, like, I don't remember what year we started. It was, I think, 2009. And so it would have been like music from maybe nothing before 2000, because we were keeping it 90s. But now here we are in 19, where music that came out in 2008 could feel nostalgic. Mm. So we're kind of like, it's just an interesting evolution of, you know, what's new, what's old, and how do you make it all make sense to everybody else? It's fun.
Mm-hmm. No, it's awesome. You know, there's definitely something to be said for, you know, using the proven material from the past, right? That's like the Lindy effect, you know, to get super technical, right? If it's been around for 10 years, odds are people will like it in another 10 years. So that, I think your music touches on that.
I mean, that's why people still wear the first 10 years of Jordans and any other Jordans, you know?
Yeah, true. That's a good point.
Maybe 11s as well, but, like, you know, it's pretty real.
Mm-hmm. And those are some of the most expensive ones now, right?
I mean, it depends on what, yeah, but I mean, they're more expensive in a retro than like whatever bullshit that comes out now that nobody really cares about, unless you're playing in the NBA.
So we'll jump around in time a little bit. So I want to go back to, you know, like, the roots of Mick. You know, I like to ask, what kind of kid were you? Was there anything that would indicate that you'd be this investor, style influencer, DJ? You know, what'd you do after school or during lunch or recess or something like that in elementary school?
I was a big nerd, man. Like, I was just like, you know, I didn't have like a lot of friends in elementary school or middle school or even high school. I was pretty much a nerd. I worked at my grandpa's drugstore. I was in marching band and symphonic band. So, I mean, I was none of these things had me going down the cool path of anything. And then I wasn't athletic. I was overweight. I was, you know, I mean, it was just like, it was a lightning list of like what the fuck not to do. Can I cuss?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know how big your audience is. But yeah, so, you know, that was kind of, it's really funny. My childhood was the exact opposite of my adulthood. There was no moment in my childhood that made me feel like, oh, this is the path he's on.
Mm, that's really interesting. And it's a common thing with people that I've spoken to, and you know, I have a similar experience in my life as well, you know, just being like very out of shape and just kind of like pessimistic, and then it totally flips the switch at some point and you just go down a different route. It's almost like a teaching experience.
Yeah. It really is. It's like, you know, sometimes you can learn what to do by what not to do. Or what not to do by what you see other people doing. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know if I said that right, but you just watch people do things and you do the opposite, or you see things that happen to you, and when you grow up, you do the opposite, and you kind of like reverse osmosis the process.
Right. I like that. Reverse osmosis mimicry. So
I just felt like I should always say that on the podcast.
So,
maybe.
So did you know, like, once you started putting these mixtapes out, once people started, you know, vibing with them, that was what you were going to do, at least for the next like some odd years?
No, not at all. Huh. It was just something I did because I loved it. And, you know, it became bigger than I thought. And then it became bigger regionally. And then it became, you know, national. And then the internet stuff was kind of hitting right at the same time, all the blogs and everything. And that gave it another boost. And then I ended up somehow in New York City fulfilling my dreams, man. It's really a crazy thing that happened. I have no idea how, but I'm really like, it was just a series of, I had to make good stuff. Yeah. Like, you have to have good material, but also it was a very good series of fortunate events that happened that allowed me to do that.
Hmm. It's like, yeah, the perfect storm of being in the right place at the right time and just also making great content.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and that's something that that interests me a lot. So I want to dig into it a little more. You know, were you really grinding, like pushing this out and trying to, you know, expand your reach in music and have people listen to you perform at clubs and events and whatnot? Or was it really just more you were doing the art, you were putting in the work, and then leading your life, and it's just people discovered what you were doing?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, I always kept the art first and foremost, the great majority of the time. But I would also say that, you know, at some point, like, I think when I finished college, I realized that, oh, wait, I can make money doing this. So it was like, how do you balance the commercialism of it with the art? And I found a way to kind of do that. And then here I am all these years later, able to do that, and I'm really grateful.
That's awesome. So can you talk on the like what's your creative process like? You know, as someone who ventures into that world a little myself, I'm curious to hear, you know, the methodology in people like yourself.
Of what?
So, like, do you have a specific time, like, let's say you're writing music or whatever other creative endeavors that you're getting into these days, we could talk on more. You know, do you wake up and at 9:30, 10 a.m., you know, you sit in the same studio every day and you're just like, you're working, you're in the zone with no phone and whatnot? Or is it something that you get into whenever you can, whenever you get a free minute?
I think my best creativity, actually, I'm pretty much a morning person, which is really weird for a DJ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do my best like mental work in the morning. It's not necessarily to say that's when I get my best ideas. I get my best ideas actually when I'm like running or like, you know, the proverbial like in the shower kind of thing. But like when my mind is like relaxed and it's not focused on what it's supposed to be, that's kind of where I get the best ideas. But I'm able to, you know, actualize those ideas most in the morning, and then somehow able to perform those ideas at night without falling asleep like an old man.
Hard to fall asleep at a club.
I've done it.
You've done it.
One time. Thank God there was a wall right behind me.
That's funny. Honestly, me too. It was my brother's bachelor party too, which makes it worse. But okay, so we'll get away from music in a minute. I just want to ask you one more question. I actually didn't know this about you. So I'm sure a lot of people, a lot of the listeners have seen or heard the Obama playlist on Spotify. And I actually read when I was doing a little research for this that you curated that you did the Obamify playlist. If anyone hasn't listened, just type it in.
No. He did the playlist. We turned it into a mixtape.
Oh, you turned it into a mixtape. Okay. So
yeah.
Was that like so when you're doing something like that, you know, you've done mixtapes for Kanye and you've done, like we talked about, Adele before and just all these big names. Do you just go in and be like, what's the coolest thing we can do? Or do you say like, this is an Obama mixtape, so I'm gonna, I need to make it a certain kind of way?
I mean, it depends on who the artist is and what the project is and what the flow is. Like the Adele thing was commissioned by Sony. Like the Leon Bridges thing was commissioned by Sony. The Summertime stuff is pretty much free will. So I have different scope to that. The Obama thing was just something we did on our own. It wasn't commissioned or whatever. It just seemed like a really unique opportunity. Because I think like the joy of doing creative projects, that doesn't necessarily always have to be about the money, or it could just be about the shock and awe factor and the fun. And, you know, people care a lot less about mixtapes now as in terms of like mixtapes that are mixed. People, even myself, like, I would just rather listen to Spotify playlists all day because it's just easier. And I mean, if I want to hear somebody DJ, like, I could just go fucking DJ. But I just, you know, we consume music so fast now because of streaming. It's just easier. But when that came out, it really wasn't like that. That was new. And people were still heavily into like streaming mixtapes. So, I mean, there is still obviously a large part of the community that enjoys doing that as well. But it's just streaming is definitely taking a bite out of that, I guess is what I'm saying. And so I just thought it'd be really interesting to like take the songs he had on his Spotify list and just give people a DJ interpretation of what that was. And it was cool. It got a lot of press pickup and people cared and it was fun. I'm really glad we did it.
Oh, that's awesome. And for everyone listening too, we'll link out to all these mixtapes and playlists and whatnot. And so you mentioned, you know, streaming and we'll touch a little on podcasts as well, because I know you have a lot of thoughts and it's very relevant for me. But just, I know exactly what you mean. It really resonates when you say like music moves so fast now with streaming and you can just listen to playlists all day and discover new music. And what do you think about that? You know, there's the beauty of novelty, right? You're listening to a new great artist every song, but then there's also, you know, the power of listening to a Kendrick Lamar album, you know, 50 times and on the 51st discovering something new.
Right. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah. So do you have an opinion on maybe like how that's changing music? Or maybe the future of music, if you think it'll become a little more of a return to like the album.
No, I don't think so.
No,
I think there's a certain group of people that want that and will always want that. You know, I'm one of those people, but I also just told you I don't listen to my own livelihood so I can listen to playlists. So like, you know, it changes, right? There's an ebb and a flow. And I think it's situational depending on what you want. For me, I listen to albums if it's an artist I'm really vested in. Like, you know, if it's not, I'm just listening to like their song if I need to know it or play it. So I think that as time goes forward, you know, you're always going to be into albums for artists that you consider like legacy artists or like if somebody that's known for making a cohesive body of work and a really artistic level. Like, I think we as music fans are gravitated more towards those albums. So, for example, if you listen to a Kendrick album, it plays with a body of work. If you listen to even like Jay-Z's last album, it plays like a body of work. Like certain things like play conceptually. Kanye's did. Like, you know, a lot of people like that level do. If you have like a Khaled album, a Khaled album has a lot of good songs and a lot of great songs, and then some songs that are just like insane, but it doesn't necessarily feel like an album. Mm-hmm. It feels like a compilation, right? So like it's almost just like a playlist, right? It's just a playlist of a bunch of really good, great, amazing songs. It doesn't, there's no real need to listen to that in album format, because it doesn't, the songs don't necessarily make sense with each other and anything like that. And a lot of rappers, and I mean, I'm speaking mostly on like the hip hop side, but
sure.
You know, it's a lot of albums are just collections of songs that are out. They don't really make sense with each other thematically. I mean, this isn't like some Pink Floyd shit from the 60s. Like there's not like, there's no real, it's just songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could look at that as that's a bad thing. And you know, there was a time where I probably would have said that. Now I think it's just what it is. Like if you want to make an album, make an album. If you want to make a bunch of songs to sell an album, do that too. Because realistically, like for all the nostalgic stuff I'm talking about, there are plenty of albums that came out in the 80s and 90s that were just a bunch of songs that didn't make sense with each other. And either nostalgia makes it feel better, or they just don't have the same resonance of, let's say, A Tribe Called Quest, Midnight Marauders, or something like that, which plays like a cohesive body of work. And, you know, I think it just really depends on the level of artistry.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed. Just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix. And if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past. Adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme and check out Jeff and Mick Boogie on this new version of Summertime.
I think you're totally right too to say that it's become more accessible now to have like these single songs, and you know, like a Khaled album is a great example, right? They're meant to be standalones. It's not meant to listen to as a whole album. So now artists are going in with that in mind, and they're probably, you know, creating songs that are more likely to just stand out on their own. Now I'm thinking of like Frank Ocean's most recent, you know, like album and releases. He had those singles, right? And then he had the album that was like a very much a cohesive thing, but the sound was different.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it depends. Yeah. I just also think about this though too. I think like some people need to grow into that way of consuming music too. If you're a 13-year-old, 14, 15-year-old kid, or a 12-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid, and you grew up with iPads and cell phones and Instagram and Snapchat, you don't care. You don't give a fuck about like sitting through like that sort of presentation, because you don't know any better. But unless your parents or somebody like informed you of that, but then you get to a point where you just want to consume things a little bit differently. And I mean, look at how, TV is the same thing, like binge watching and all that stuff too. Now it's TV consuming also actually kind of became what the album was. Like you just didn't want single after single after single after single. You want the whole album and you want to watch it in one time. So that's kind of an ironic twist on your question, how that's kind of become the opposite of what's happening with music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a little bit easier, like mentally easier to listen to new songs and watch, you know, new things, but I guess you're right. There's a place for both of them. So I know you. I'm eager to talk to you about podcasting, and so you had for everyone listening, Mick also is an investor. So he's been pretty active on the business side. And actually, before we talk about Anchor Podcast and like your thoughts on the space, how did you and why did you make that jump from music to the, you know, investing and being an advisor and into business and style as well?
You know, I just started DJing a lot of stuff in that space.
Mm-hmm.
for tech companies, venture capital firms, ad agencies, just like I jokingly always call it like smart people shit. And I just was drawn to that because it was the world that I would have been in if I didn't become a DJ, right? It was what my background was in school, and it's where my mind goes when I'm not doing music stuff.
Mm.
And so with that in mind, I just the circles around me started changing. I started getting, you know, access and opportunities to be part of things. And then from there, it was like I realized I could actually add value to them. Mm-hmm. You know, in a different way than other investors could add value through like these certain relationships I have or ideas or things I've seen. And it became a two-way street of like a complete win-win. And it also became something I just truly love being a part of. So I do it.
That's awesome. Yeah, and you're totally right too to say that it you provide like a different perspective. That's something, you know, as an entrepreneur that I'm always looking for is there's plenty of investors out there, but having the right investors, you know, smart, unique thoughts that could actually contribute in like a different way. That's how you build the business.
Yeah, completely. It's like, you know, diversity of opinions is what does it. I mean, that goes even into like the corporate culture of these companies. Like the more different opinions you have that are, I mean, obviously you need credible opinions, but like the more diverse the body of people that create these opinions, the more unique things that can be uncovered.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So, okay. So now I want to touch on podcasts. So we actually met in New York at Ad Week, and you gave a talk on like the future of audio. And I remember asking a question about podcasts, and you had some cool thoughts on where you think the space is going to go. And even since then, we've seen a lot of growth with the Spotify, Anchor, Gimlet merger. So, you know, how do you feel? Where do you see this industry? You think it's growing even more? And what most excites you about it?
I don't remember exactly what I said that day, but I know that was before Anchor got bought by Spotify. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the beginning. I think the fact that even Spotify bought Anchor shows you that the potential is there for so much more stuff, especially user-generated podcasts, which is a fascinating kind of world that they pioneered. I do think also that audio in general is a medium that's completely untapped still. Mm-hmm. When you think about, I mean, I see a lot of people using like Alexa and stuff, but you know, it's not where it's going to nearly be in 5 years or 10 years. It's going to be next level out of here with all of that. There won't be a time where you have to ask somebody to create an Alexa skill for something. It would just be what it is, and you know, you'll just use it. It won't be like a bonus add-on to somebody's thing. It just will be the thing. And that'll be a pretty fascinating time, especially if you're a kid that growing up in that, it's just like you're just gonna be walking around thinking you could just, you know, ask for something anywhere in the world just with your voice and it just appears. It's voice stuff and drones combined is gonna be in VR is gonna be a crazy world in the next 15 years when you put that all together. And I'm sure Amazon's gonna own it all.
Well, that's no, it's really interesting that you brought up you know, those three, and you mentioned like VR. And so I was just South by Southwest recently, and I was talking to two of my business partners while I was there. And I was like, guys, we have gotten into the right space. Like, we have a whale on our hands, because everything, Nick, like everything was audio. You know, you walk down Rainy Street and all those little exhibitors where, you know, there was a Sony has a new pair of sunglasses that have speakers in the stems that go to your ears.
I think it's Bose that has that.
Bose.
I'm going to that.
You're right. It was Bose. And then there was
not to correct you on your own shit. But I just, like, I went to that actually with the Anchor people, and we thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, and oh man, there's so many cool things.
Magical,
one.
Really.
Yeah, it's almost like, and this is kind of my little pet theory, we've been talking about augmented reality, AR, with like glasses and, you know, like what you're going to see with AR, but I don't think it's that. I think AR is really, I think podcast is the beginning of AR, really. It's like you're listening to, in the words of the Gimlet guy, it's companionship, and it could be, you know, a way to improve whatever you're doing at the time.
Yeah, I could see it.
So your investor in Anchor, any other, you know, like technologies or companies that you are maybe not invested in, but you're excited about? You mentioned Amazon and such and drones.
I'd rather tell you the things I'm invested in because I could speak to them pretty thoroughly. I'm invested in well, I'm not actually technically not invested in Anchor anymore because they got bought, but my kid will now be invested in college, so that'll be phenomenal. In 15 years, but hopefully college still exists in 15 years. We'll see. If not, maybe I'll get like a boat. But anyways, I'm in a company called Local Air, which is a really interesting travel app, like curating local experiences globally. It's doing really well. I'm in a company called Dot Dot Dash, which is based in Portland, and they create like VR and AR and just like robots and all sorts of like creative like experiences for brands. They do really, really, really innovative work for Nike and Adidas and Honda and JB. I mean, you name it, they've done stuff for them. Marvel. That's really, really, really cool stuff. And I drink a lot of wine. I'm in a wine company called Wink, W-I-N-C. It's like a really great, like curated direct-to-consumer wine company. Really good wine. Also, just the ease of use is what's really nice. A lot of people have like, you know, a stigma with, oh, I got to go to the wine store. I got to be rich. I got to know all these things. And that's not true. And we just try to solve that. I'm in a company called Barber Surgeons Guild, which does men's grooming, men's wellness. And they actually have a patent on a unique way to actually restore men's hair, which is obviously why I invested, because I'm bald. I actually like being bald, but now it's nice to know that I get a discount if I ever need hair. And they do really great work. They're in West Hollywood, so they have a huge A-list like Hollywood clientele, and they're opening in New York here in the fall as well, which is great. And the last thing I'm invested in is a company called Backdrop, which is a really amazing I really love the direct to consumer space, and they are a paint company. It's doing really well. They just launched over the summer. Actually, not over summer, but a winter. I have no idea what day it is anymore. And they're kind of like, if you could take like the Away luggage model and the Casper model and you apply it to paint, that's what they do. And they're crushing it. And their branding is probably the best branding I've ever seen on a startup ever. And the team is strong. And that's also just because that might be another question that you're going to ask. Like my whole investment thesis with people is like, you know, the idea can't suck. The numbers can't suck. The market can't suck. But the people, they can't just not suck. The people have to be like fucking all stars, because they're going to be the one to pivot everything else and figure it out. And that's kind of how I have gotten into all these scenarios. Like some of the ideas have changed, some of the ideas have pivoted. That doesn't matter. I mean, it obviously like matters to an extent, but like a good person's going to figure the shit out. And that's a huge thing for me. Huge.
Right. Now you're totally on. It's like, as long as the people are adaptable and people that you like really believe in, then they'll point in the right direction.
Yeah.
Totally. So we'll have just be respectful of your time. There's a couple of questions that I like to ask everyone.
Sure.
And so one of the things that I always ask is for like books and podcasts, music, documentary. You've been creative for a long time and do a lot of different things. So you can take that as you will. It can be an individual that you really like and think their thoughts are cool, their work's cool, but just anyone that's really informed your life or that you're just enjoying right now.
My favorite book is this book called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. It's absolutely my favorite book. It's changed my life multiple times every time I read it. It's just basically about using things that are thrown in your path to make your life better rather than make it worse. And it's pretty cool. And it's a mind state. It's a great business book. It's a great personal life book. It's a great you're stuck in traffic on the freeway book. Like there's just so many different ways you can apply it to every aspect of your life. And I just highly recommend it for everybody. Ryan has a really great website and podcast series too. I think that's really, I don't know if he has a podcast. He has a great interview series on his site, talking with various people, even myself included, about how that mind state has created success. It's pretty fascinating. Podcast wise, what am I listening to? I tend to listen to a lot of just business things, depending on what I want to learn at the time. I don't really gravitate towards anything specifically. Documentaries, I think you said. You know what I watch a lot of, and I'm sad there's only 8 of them, but I love it. It has nothing to do with like business or life or improving anything, but they have these really great documentaries on Netflix called The Toys That Made Us. And they deep dive into like all 80s and 90s shit, like Transformers and G.I. Joe and Barbie and Star Wars. And it's just really cool because you think like you can see the movies and buy the toys, and you, or you remember them from when you were a kid and you think you know everything. And then they break it down to like, there was a factory in China in 1932 and a soldier walked in and threw away a tin can, and they found that tin can and realized that, you know, you could create a robot out of a tin can. And then World War II happened, and then that robot became, you know, like, and that's how, like, it was some, that was like some weird context about the Transformers. It was like, what the fuck, you know, like, it was not like there were some dudes sitting at, you know, at Hasbro in Iowa or wherever they are. You know, it was just like, it was some really fascinating stuff.
And I
like that. I try to for a while I was only feeding myself information that's like important for like my career, and then I realized I have to like get my mind a break.
Yeah, right. And sometimes you have the best ideas, like we were talking about before, indirectly, you know, some oblique source, like the toys that I can speak to the Holiday book as well. Yeah, the way he mixes like Stoic philosophy, you know, like Marcus Aurelius and all those ancient guys, and makes it palatable and like relevant today is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
So two last questions. One of them's is a new segment, so we'll see how that goes. It's your birthday, Mick. You, no strings attached. You're anywhere and it's with anyone. What are you doing?
I'm on a around the world trip with my kid.
Mm. That's awesome. Where on the world?
But it would have to be like a future birthday, because he's only about to be four. He really wouldn't appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, since it's a made up story, that'll never happen. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And the last question that I ask everyone is, so you wake up and there's a text message on your phone, and it's from Mick Batiski. You know, it's reached a million people. What would it say? And this could be something as long as, you know, five paragraphs. It could be two words, you know, a sentence, like as many platitudes as you want.
Oh, that's a great question.
In the past, people have talked about, like, you know, there's the cliches, like, even, you know, put in the work and just, like, you know, you can, you know, believe you can get after it. Or maybe Ryan Holiday would say the obstacle is the way. But maybe some, or maybe an experience that you would share in your past that made you.
I would say for me, it's just like, I don't know how this would read in the text, but the one thing I would say is that, like, as long as you put like the good energy out to your path of how you're trying to do things, it's really interesting when you look back on it with hindsight to see how everything's all connected. They always say like the past is like 2020 or whatever, or hindsight 2020. And I just feel like in my life has been a series of unconnected events since college, dating up all the way until today. And some of them don't really make sense with each other. But when I look back at it, I can absolutely see how everything is linearly connected, even though in the day-to-day, it's almost like a heart EKG. It's like up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And then like, what the fuck? And then you look back at your life, and even if it's not always going up, even if you could see the straight line where, it, you know, I mean, you hope it's always going up overall, but everything ends up making sense. You know, for me, it was like, the thing I didn't think I needed to know at 26 really came in handy at 33, or the person that I met at 30 was very helpful to somebody else I met at 34, and I introduced them, and then that person came back and introduced me to somebody at 30. Like, you know, there's just always this interconnectivity. So I don't know how to put that in the text or into a 140 character tweet, or I guess it's 280 now, but like, it would be something along those lines, because that's something that I've realized is a fascinating approach.
No, that was perfect, Nick. Thanks for your time.
Of course.
Oh, cinnamon, where you gonna run to?